I will invite our first presenter, Kathy Huffling. Kathy Huffling is a certified nurse midwife and a director of programs for the Alliance of Nurses for Healthy Environments. In her current position, Ms. Huffling coordinates the activities of the Alliance and works with nurses around the country on a variety of environmental health issues. Ms. Huffling is a champion of inclusion of environmental health in nursing practice and has authored a number of peer-reviewed articles on women's health and the environment. Title of her presentation is Protecting Reproductive Health Through Comprehensive Pesticide Review, Science Guiding Public Policy. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. And can you hear me okay? I'm getting over a cold. I'm a little stuffy. And I have no relationships to disclose. So I think that many times when we think of policy change, we focus on legislation, whether it's federal, state, or at the local level. And in this presentation, we wanted to describe another avenue where public health professionals, health practitioners, and scientists can really make a difference in how policy is created and implemented. And I'll be describing my group's participation in an innovative program, the Reach the Decision Makers program. And Marge Plum, who will be talking later, will be describing that fellowship in great detail, but I'll be describing my group's experiences. And so just to give a little context from where we were coming from and how our group got our interest in this fellowship, as many of you probably know, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey has been incorporating body burden studies for about the last 10 years or so. And they found in our blood and urine and breast milk, pesticides from the food that we eat, flame retardants from our furniture and electronics, and many chemicals that have been banned over 30 years ago. And these chemicals are linked to a myriad of health problems, such as cancer, asthma, obesity, and reproductive health problems, such as infertility. And so we know that these chemicals are being found in measurable quantities in our bodies and have been linked to these health effects. So are they really making these changes in our reproductive health? And I know this is a little bit of a busy slide, but this just goes over some of the indicators that are showing that we are having declining reproductive function. We're seeing things such as difficulty conceiving and maintaining a pregnancy and decreased sperm counts. And we're seeing increasing rates of reproductive illnesses, such as testicular cancer. And in my own midwifery practice, I have been noticing more and more women coming in, young women who should be at the peak of their fertility, that were having problems becoming pregnant. And the Reach the Decision Makers program was developed to address these reproductive health issues. This 9-month fellowship gives participants the tools that they need, and we learn about the latest science and provide a scientific counterpoint to the information being provided by interest groups with financial interest. Everyday representatives from manufacturers and other industry groups go to these decision makers, such as at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and they go with their views of the science and their perspectives on policy decisions, and we were able to provide a different public health perspective. And so this is my group. Each team had to pick a policy project to work on over 9 months of the fellowship, and then we'd present to the decision makers at the EPA. And we were there at the height of the Occupy Wall Street movement, so we're like, we're going to be Occupy EPA. It was like our joke during the week. So our group had a diverse array of expertise and interests, but we were able to find a project that nicely utilized all of our specific skills and individual strengths. So in our group, we have Al May. He's a public health district liaison for the State of Maine Department of Health and Human Services, and he's interested in how environmental exposures are impacting rural populations. And next in line is me, and as a nurse midwife, I was just interested in more of a broad reproductive environmental health. Next, we have Gucci Cook. She's the director of the First Environment Collaborative, and she's an Aboriginal midwife and a Mohawk Indian. And Gucci's been really instrumental in researching how environmental exposures are impacting Native populations. Next, we have Carol Kwiatkowski. She's the executive director of the Endocrine Disruptor Exchange, and so obviously she was interested in how endocrine disrupting chemicals impact human health. And then finally, we have Pamela Miller. She's the executive director of the Alaska Community Action on Toxics, and she's interested in how Arctic populations and the Arctic environment are being impacted by environmental chemicals. And so we called our group the Collaborators Protecting Our Future, and we decided on that because we decided to focus on the pesticide chlorpyrifos, and it's commonly known as CPF, so it worked quite nicely with our name there. So just to give you a bit of a background on chlorpyrifos, chlorpyrifos is an organophosphate pesticide. It's also known as Durzban. And with 10 million pounds applied annually, it's one of the most widely used pesticides in the United States. And besides being sprayed on crops during growth or soon after harvest, it's also used when they store grain. So I didn't realize this until we started doing this research, but conventionally grown grains can be held in silos for up to a year before they're used. And so they will periodically spray them with CPF to get rid of pests that may be occurring during that storage time. In 2000, the EPA and Dow AgroSciences agreed to stop the sale of most home uses of CPF because of health risks that were primarily seen in children. And then in 2001, the EPA canceled all residential uses except contained ant and roach baits, and that was due to the exposures in children. And what they found was that even at low doses that occurred in people's homes before the residential ban, they were enough to be associated with measurable cognitive deficits and developmental delays in children who were exposed during early fetal and infant development. And new research that has just come out in the past 6 months, and that's the reference there, they found there's visual changes to the brains of children exposed to CPF in utero. And these changes are visible across the surface of the brain with abnormal enlargement of some areas and thinning in others. And this is associated with decreased IQ and memory problems at age 7. So chlorpyrifos and other pesticides are managed by the EPA through a pesticide registration process. And in addressing the 1988 amendments to the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, or FIFRA, the EPA has established a 15-year re-registration cycle for pesticides that are already registered. And this is in order to address new science on how these pesticides may be impacting human health and the environment. And in July of 2011, the EPA released a preliminary human health risk assessment as they required through that re-registration process. So we were able to provide comments on those when it was open through October 2011. And we developed 4 key points for our response to the preliminary assessment and then based our agenda at face-to-face meetings at the EPA on those comments. The first point was that we felt that Native tribal communities may have significant sources of CPF exposure that was not being addressed by the preliminary assessment. And this is a Mohawk Indian mother and her children farming in their tribal community. Significant exposures to chlorpyrifos in Indian country in comparison to the general U.S. population are possible due to several factors. These include that 43% of Indians live in rural areas compared to just 21% of the general U.S. population. They may have minimal funding. They may have a lack of trained personnel in how to apply pesticides. And 23% of those that live in tribal areas are at or below the poverty line compared to 12% of the general U.S. population. Another example of the disproportionate pesticide exposure in tribal communities is its presence in human breast milk. And human breast milk is a bioresource at the foundation of subsistence communities and traditional foodways of the American tribal population. And the CPF in breast milk could be a significant source of exposure in tribal infants. We felt that the EPA must consider the presence of CPF in the Arctic and exposures to vulnerable, overburdened Arctic populations. Several studies have identified chlorpyrifos in Arctic seawater, snow, ice cores, estuarine sediments, marine fog, air, and biota, and CPF has also been found in Alaskan fish. The National Marine Fisheries Service biological opinion determined that the proposed re-registration of chlorpyrifos will jeopardize the continuing existence of over 25 salmon species in Alaska. And this could have profound implications for the tribes and other subsistence communities that live in the Pacific Northwest and Alaska, who rely on salmon as a fundamental to their, not just their physical sustenance, but their spiritual and cultural traditions. And these are just a couple photos of some of the people that Pam works with in Alaska, and they don't use CPF up in Alaska, and yet they're being significantly impacted by CPF drift that's coming up into the Arctic areas. We also felt that there were unreasonable adverse impacts on children and infants in rural areas, and that hadn't been significantly addressed within the preliminary human health risk assessment. Children living in agricultural areas have been found to have higher exposures to chlorpyrifos. These exposures can occur through several pathways, including contaminated soil, dust, work clothing, drinking water, food, and air drift as it's applied. Prenatal exposure to chlorpyrifos has also been shown to negatively impact birth outcomes. A 2004 study by Wyatt et al. Found a significant association between cord blood levels and decreased birth weight and length, which indicates impaired fetal growth. Over time, these children were found to have impaired neurological functioning, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, developmental disorders, and lowered IQ. And some studies have suggested that infants born with low birth weight may be at increased risk of chronic diseases such as hypertension, type 2 diabetes, and heart disease. In the preliminary human health risk assessment, chlorpyrifos is indicated to be on the endocrine disruptor screening program of the US EPA, and it's on the first list of chemicals to undergo tier 1 screening, which is designed to identify effects on the estrogen, androgen, and thyroid hormonal systems. Chemicals that have the potential to interact with any one of these hormonal systems would then proceed to tier 2 testing to determine adverse effects and dose response relationships. And we felt that the EPA could not wait for decisions from that screening program instead of addressing the endocrine disrupting effects that we're already seeing from other studies. And there's a huge list of studies, so I'm just going to just give you a taste of some of the things that they're finding. So like with the thyroid with prenatal exposures, they're finding decreased follicles and T3 effects. The androgenic effects in subfertile men, they're showing that increased chlorpyrifos levels is associated with decreased testosterone level. We're seeing positive estrogen responses. And the other effects are things like early puberty and increased cholesterol and triglyceride levels. So when we set up our meetings with the EPA to talk about chlorpyrifos and other pesticide re-registrations, we tried to meet with what we thought were the most relevant offices based on the comments that we had created. And so these are just some of our suggestions for meeting with the EPA if any of you decide to go do that. And one thing I have to say is you really need to plan out what you're going to say and so you can tag team with one another. And then also having a meeting leader to keep things on point. It's easy to kind of wander off into the weeds. And you only have an hour usually, so you've got to be right on top of it. And then make sure that you have an ask. How can EPA do something for you? But then also, how can you help them with that? You want to be a resource for them if they need it. And so our ask when we went to meet with them is we addressed the issue of the pesticide registration program, and it's supposed to make sure that there's no unreasonable adverse events from the use of these pesticides. And so we said we felt that they needed to make a more comprehensive review to look at things like the tribal populations, rural children, the endocrine disrupting effects. And so we used our comments to support our position on that. And these are just some of the highlights from our meetings. One of the things that I really liked with the Office of Children's Health Protection is we were talking about how, especially like with rural communities or in the Arctic populations, there's a lot of quantitative data, and it doesn't make its way usually into these types of risk assessments, but they were like, you know, it really does need to get into that, you know, the lived experience of having pesticides used in your areas or how it affects the people in those areas. So that was really positive. The Office of Pesticide Programs, one thing that I hadn't realized before we went there is that if it's in the middle of a review process, that they really can't make any direct comments, so they kind of just listen to you and they nod their heads and can't really make any comments. But we were able to make a nice connection with Dr. Bradbury, who's the head of that office, and we've actually had several conference calls with him since then discussing this topic, and they've been very open to continuing that discussion. And then I think one of the best meetings that we had was with the Tribal Office and Environmental Justice. They didn't know anything about chlorpyrifos, so we were able to educate them on that, and they were very interested in becoming more involved, especially with the tribal exposures. They felt that that was something significant. And so these are some of our accomplishments since we started the program. One thing that was really exciting that just happened recently, our comments were used in a document created by the Pesticide Action Network of North America, and it's entitled Chlorpyrifos as a Global POP, which is Persistent Organic Pollutants, and they're trying to get it added to the Stockholm Convention. So more news to come on that. And some advocacy tips, and I think that one of the most important things is they try, the EPA really wants to do good, you know, but they're being pushed around a lot by politicians and people in Washington, and so you just have to be aware of that, that they do want to do what's best for the environment and for people, but they also have to work in a political environment. And then these are some of our resources. All of the materials that we created for our visit in Washington are available on the environ.org website. If you just go there and search for chlorpyrifos, all of our materials come up, our comments. We have lots of things on there. And then this is all of us after our last meeting of EPA, and we're in the back of a taxi, and we're all giddy, and we're like, woo-hoo, it was so awesome. Yeah, so thank you very much. Any questions? Great, well, thank you very much.
Hello. Oh, you like? Oh.
I was wondering, do you have any plans to
Help
evaluate?
Well, Marge, I think we'll probably be talking about evaluations. Yeah, so she's going to go into that. They've been evaluating all of us former REACH fellows quite a bit to see how successful we were. So. But it was a really great program, and all of us have continued to work together on this. You know, not as regularly as during the fellowship, but we have conference calls every few months. So it's been really wonderful. You mean who at EPA would be enforcing it? So, right, so like with the re-registration process, you know, we were having to work within pretty much the Office of Pesticide Programs because they were the ones enforcing it, but other offices within EPA can talk with that office. They, the Office of Children's Health Protection actually provided comments like we did on the preliminary human health risk assessment. So that can be a really good use of people like us if we're monitoring when these comments are coming out, because not all the other offices know when comments are out there. So you can be like, look, they're taking comments on this. It might be important for you to make comments as well. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thank you.